Experts claim there is nothing tougher than a diamond. But at Diamonds Direct, we beg to differ. Have you ever met a mother? Strong, radiant, timeless. This Mother's Day, give her the gift that meets her match. With diamond jewelry starting at $200, plus Diamonds Direct's exceptional quality and unbeatable everyday price, you're sure to give her a gift that wows this generation and the next to come. Experience the thrill of jewelry shopping done right at Diamonds Direct. Diamonds Direct. Your love, our passion.
Escape to summer with Victoria's Secret's just-arrived collection of swim and other sun-ready silhouettes. Pack your bags with new styles from the Very Sexy collection, like the made-to-be-seen Very Sexy Push-Up Bra, in on-trend hues like green and citron and black shine. Rewind to the future with the VS Archives Swim Collection, inspired by Victoria's Secret's classic looks from the 90s and early 2000s. Plus, mix and match with their wide range of bikini tops and bottoms to find your dream suit. Shop now at your closest Victoria's Secret store or online at victoriassecret.com.
Can I rant for a sec?
Please.
Pay apps are way too public.
What happened?
Some rando hearted a payment from 5 months ago, and I realized people can see my entire history, who I'm paying, like full names. It's super weird.
Yeah, it's weird. How are you paying your friends then?
Apple Cash. It's all in messages. You can literally send cash like a text, and it stays between friends. Random people can't see it.
Did you just pay me a dollar on Apple Cash?
Shh.
Services are provided by Green Dot Bank, member FDIC. Terms apply.
Welcome to Criminalia, a production of Shondaland Audio in partnership with iHeartRadio.
On April 1st, 1896, the Louvre in Paris announced it had purchased a tiara from two Russian art dealers, brothers Shopshel and Leba Hopman, and they paid nearly 200,000 francs for it. Experts at the museum believed it must have been from the treasure house of a great Scythian king, and they believed that it predated the 3rd century BC, which meant, to them, it had the exciting potential to rewrite ancient history. And those beliefs pretty much rocked the world of archaeology. The artifact did make an impact, but not in the way the museum had imagined or had hoped. Just a few days after putting it on display, there were already questions about its authenticity. The tiara, they would come to learn, was forged with the help of a skilled goldsmith named Israel Rokomovsky, meaning it was fake. And in this episode, we're talking about it as part of a larger conversation of what happens when fakes are discovered in museum collections, how often this happens, and how institutions deal with the problem. Welcome to Criminalia. I'm Maria Tremarchi.
And I'm Holly Fry. The object, which is called the Tiara of Cyataphernes or Cytophernes, depending on your pronunciation, we have heard both, it's around 7 inches or 18 centimeters in height. It isn't what you might imagine when you hear the word tiara. It's a domed, helmet-like structure. Made entirely of gold, it weighs just a little more than 1 pound, or 450 grams. There are 3 distinct sections of the tiara, each of which is covered in relief depictions. Each third of the piece tells its own story. One section is fashioned in what's known as the Greek openwork ornamental style, a style dating back more than 2,000 years, and it features a crown with a snake having its head twisted into a spiral. The middle section features famous scenes from Homer's Iliad, including Agamemnon and Achilles quarreling with each other for Briseis. The final section features scenes from the everyday lives of Scythians, including children learning archery, examples of flora and fauna of the region, and hunting scenes. The tiara also features an inscription which describes the story behind the origin of the object. Alleged origin, and suggests that it had been gifted to Scythian king Cytaphernes from the Greek colony of Olbia, located on the Black Sea coast. Today, that's Mykolaiv Oblast in Ukraine.
The Louvre, experts have said in hindsight, acted on what they considered an opportunity to grab an historical artifact before others realized its value. In fact, before the museum made its purchase, the British Museum, as well as the Imperial Court Museum in Vienna, had both declined to buy the tiara. Notable art critics, including German archaeologist Adolf Furtwängler and Russian literary theorist and historian Alexei Veslovsky, pointed out concerning areas of the piece. both denounced the artifact in print shortly after it was exhibited. The Louvre, though, disregarded the criticisms, and in response, as printed in the New York Times at the time, the museum stated that, quote, authorities took in no pleasant way Professor Furtwängler's criticism on certain objects in their collection, notably the tiara of Cytopherneus, which he declared to be spurious. This was also a tumultuous time between France and Germany, and museum officials also went as far as to state that, quote, because the professor was German, his motives to do so have been dictated by spite. The main criticisms of the tiara were these, though, and they were valid. One, stylistically, it was off, and two, its state of preservation was also off. For an object assumed to be as ancient as it was, there appeared to be damage and wear in only non-essential areas, if you can call it that, and very little in general. Critics believed this was not an ancient Scythian tiara, and that the Louvre had been the victim of a scam. This war of words that had sparked between the museum and the Parisian press continued for nearly 6 years.
It was in 1903 when criticism really began to build. The newspaper Le Matin published a letter by a Russian jeweler named Lifshitz, who claimed that he had personally witnessed his friend Israel Rukmovsky making the tiara in question. Rukmovsky, from a small town near Odessa, was brought to Paris. And when questioned by experts at the Louvre, he claimed he knew the Hochman brothers, but that they had apparently lied to him. He admitted he had made the object, but he had not known their intentions when he gave it to them. He continued they had asked him to make it as a gift, quote, for an archaeologist friend, and they provided him with books showing Greco-Scythian artifacts on which to base the work. And he could and did name the exact reference books they gave him. Bilder Atlas für Weltgeschichte, that's Picture Atlas for World History, Antiquité de la Russie Méridionale, that's Antiquities of South Russia. And he also described how he made the object in three parts and that he had soldered them together. Museum officials, after listening to his story, gave him a sheet of gold and asked him to prove his skill as a goldsmith, which he easily did. And they knew right then that they were sitting with the maker, the provenance of what they had thought was an ancient tiara. They had been duped.
Today, it's explained that the Louvre, taken in by the overwhelming desire to acquire a piece like the tiara, had missed or overlooked warning signs that could have saved them the money and the embarrassment. But they aren't the only museum to fall for fakes, though, through the years. There are many objects in American museums and museums around the world that have no documented provenance, or they have incomplete or unverifiable histories. We've been telling a lot of stories this season about this very problem, so we thought we'd spend a little time talking about how institutions have dealt with spurious works in their collections and why they aren't always caught.
We're going to take a break here for a little word from our sponsors, and when we're back, we will talk about some high-profile, well-known fakes and the museums who own them. Hey, everybody, it's Holly. Listen, I've been doing stuff on stage since I was a kid, which means that I have been doing my makeup since I was a kid. And I can turn out a look when I need to, but on my day-to-day, I really like to keep it a little more relaxed and low-key. I don't have time for a full face most of the time. But that also means that Thrive Cosmetics can have me covered no matter what I'm doing, whether I'm doing something on stage, like I have an appearance or a live show, or I'm just running to the grocery store. Something in their line is perfect. And what I really love and what's important to me is that they are certified 100% vegan and cruelty-free. And to me, cruelty-free is very important in the cosmetics I use. I mentioned that I've been doing my makeup for a long time. I've gotten older in that time. And one of the things that I've done to refresh my look is switch over to their Brilliant Eye Brighteners and use something like a rose gold shade to really like go all around my eye and then just blend it out and get a daytime smoky look. It makes me look a little more youthful and more refreshed. And it's just easy as pie, and it means that I don't have to mess with a whole ton of products. Refresh your everyday look with Thrive Cosmetics, luxury beauty that gives back. Right now, you can get an exclusive 10% off your first order at thrivecosmetics.com/criminalia. That's Thrive Cosmetics, CAUSEMETICS.com/Criminalia for 10% off your first order.
Escape to summer with Victoria's Secret. Pack your bags with just-arrived swim, cover-ups, corset tops, and other sexy silhouettes. When the sun goes down, opt for bold and blingy styles, like the made-to-be-seen Very Sexy Push-Up Bra from the Very Sexy Collection, in on-trend hues like Black Shine, Green, and Citron. For a glam statement, pair them with your favorite jeans and bring the heat. Because life is better in a bikini. Rewind to the future with the VS Archive Swim Collection, inspired by Victoria's Secret's classic looks from the 90s and early 2000s. For endless out-of-office options, mix and match with Victoria's Secret's wide range of bikini tops and bottoms that offer you every type of coverage, from full to cheeky to minimal. And now in this season's must-have shades and patterns, add the finishing touch with the limited edition Bombshell Escape fragrance, a free spirited take on the iconic Victoria's Secret scent. Dive into a vibrant blend of juicy guava, lush palms, and summer glow peony. Shop now at your closest Victoria's Secret store or online at victoriassecret.com.
Can I rant for a sec?
Please.
Pay apps are way too public.
What happened?
Some rando hearted a payment from 5 months ago, and I realized people can see my entire history, who I'm paying, like full names. It's super weird.
Yeah, it's weird. How are you paying your friends then?
Apple Cash. It's all in messages. You can literally send cash like a text, and it stays between friends. Random people can't see it.
Did you just pay me a dollar on Apple Cash?
Shh.
Services are provided by Green Dot Bank, member FDIC. Terms apply.
Welcome back to Criminalia. All right, so let's talk about some more fake art.
The Louvre still owns the tiara of Cyataphrines, though it is no longer exhibited. In the awkwardness of making such a mistake, the museum removed the artifact from display and placed it in storage. But it has been exhibited since the acquisition scandal. In 1954, the museum included the tiara in a collection called Salon of Fakes, along with 8 fake Mona Lisas. In 1997, the Israel Museum in Jerusalem borrowed the tiara from the Louvre for inclusion in their exhibit on Rachmovsky's works. Rachmovsky, despite this famous piece of forgery, became famous for his own work, his legitimate work, and he earned a gold medal at the Paris Salon of Decorative Arts. Jumping ahead to more recent years, this is still an object people want to see. In 2009, the High Museum of Art in Atlanta borrowed the tiara from the Louvre to include in an exhibition. And as recently as 2018, the LWL Museum of Archaeology in Herne, Germany, borrowed it for their exhibition, Errors and Forgeries in Archaeology. Today, a replica of the tiara is on display in the British Museum, and another can be seen on display at the Tel Aviv Museum of Art.
Sometimes, when works of art are very fragile and very valuable, museums choose to display replicas of them for safety and longevity reasons. But these are not the fakes we're talking about. We're talking about art forgeries, and they come in a few flavors. And there are some common problems experts are quick to list. First, attribution. Problems with attribution happen when a work is discovered not to be that of the attributed artist, such as Goya's Colossus, which was actually the work of one of his apprentices. To that point, 5th century BCE sculptor Phidias is said to have signed the work of his talented students. Not an uncommon practice during his time in history, yet a practice that can make attribution tricky today. There can also be issues with style or iconography, or just general inconsistencies in the materials and methods used to create the work. And it's of course problematic when a work is determined or suspected of being a con, such as the 2017 Modigliani exhibit in Genoa's Ducal Palace, in which every single one of the 21 paintings on display were discovered to be fake.
Another example? Oh, we've got them. In 2000, Sotheby's and Christie's learned that they each held the one and only Vase de Fleurs by Gauguin. And Newsweek writers once quipped that of the 2,500 paintings French painter Camille Corot created in his lifetime, 7,800 could be seen in the United States. Art forger Mark Landis donated fake art to more than 40 American museums before he was discovered to be producing forgeries. That happened in 2011. And even more recently, British artist John Myatt, known for his forged Giacometti painting of a seated nude, is known as a genuine forger, who signs each of his fake works on the front with the misattributed artist's signature, while on the back you will find inscribed genuine fake. We could list these examples for days.
In 2010, British newspaper The Independent estimated that more art than we realize in major UK museums is likely fake. Quote, at least 20% of the paintings held by Britain's major museums, some up on the walls, many others in the vaults, will no longer be attributed to the same painter 100 years from now. The newspaper published their report in tandem with a National Gallery exhibition that showed how many times that one museum had been the victim of fake paintings over the years. Let's just say, a lot. Statistics vary from report to report and among institutions, but we've seen numbers putting the percentage of fake objects on display as high as 10 to 20%, but no one's really sure how big that number is.
According to Rita Kersting, deputy director and curator at the Museum Ludwig in Cologne, the proliferation of fakes has greatly affected the art community, quote, like no other thing. She notes that censorship of avant-garde art has meant that many works have disappeared, but could still resurface decades from now on the Western market with incomplete provenance. And she cites that is a gap that is easily exploited by forgers. And art critic Maureen Malarkey also says, quote, the forgery market keeps pace with contemporary trends. Forgers are driven, like collectors themselves, by high auction prices. Forgery extends even to artists like Jean-Michel Basquiat, who are not traditional blue chips.
We're going to take a break for a word from our sponsor. When we return, we'll talk about some of the common things museums do to avoid acquiring a forgery, and some ways they can handle it when they actually do.
Escape to summer with Victoria's Secret. Pack your bags with just-arrived swim, cover-ups, corset tops, and other sexy silhouettes. When the sun goes down, opt for bold and blingy styles, like the made-to-be-seen Very Sexy Push-Up Bra from the Very Sexy Collection, in on-trend hues like Black Shine, Green, and Citron. For a glam statement, pair them with your favorite jeans and bring the heat. Because life is better in a bikini. Rewind to the future with the VS Archive Swim Collection, inspired by Victoria's Secret's classic looks from the 90s and early 2000s. For endless out-of-office options, mix and match with Victoria's Secret's wide range of bikini tops and bottoms that offer you every type of coverage, from full to cheeky to minimal. And now in this season's must-have shades and patterns, add the finishing touch with a limited edition Bombshell Escape fragrance, a free spirited take on the iconic Victoria's Secret scent. Dive into a vibrant blend of juicy guava, lush palms, and summer glow peony. Shop now at your closest Victoria's Secret store or online at victoriassecret.com.
This episode is brought to you by SimpliSafe. Listen, you listen to true crime podcasts, you know that the world can be dangerous and unpredictable and that there will unfortunately be people who want to hurt each other. And so it's kind of nice to get a little peace of mind by having a good home security system. Just take a few precautions, and I recommend looking at SimpliSafe Home Security. I've had my home broken into in the past, and it was a terrible feeling, even though nothing that bad really happened. Aside from an intruder, I just really like knowing that I have a security setup that lets me check in on my pets when I'm not home. That is a huge peace of mind giver when I am out traveling. SimpliSafe sent me a whole home security system, and I was really, really impressed by the variety of indoor and outdoor cameras they offer. And the whole thing is backed by 24/7 professional monitoring for less than a dollar a day. Get 20% off any new SimpliSafe system when you sign up for Fast Protect Monitoring. Just visit simplisafe.com/criminalia. That's SimpliSafe, SimpliSafe.com/criminalia. There's no safe like SimpliSafe.
The 2024 presidential campaign features two candidates who are very well known to Americans. And yet, there's complexity at every turn. Criminal trials for one of those candidates. Young voters who are angry. The Campaign Moment podcast from The Washington Post gives you what matters. I'm Aaron Blake, and I'm covering my 10th election cycle. My colleagues and I have insights that you won't find anywhere else. So follow The Campaign Moment right now, wherever you're listening.
Welcome back to Criminalia. Let's talk about what museums can and have done when they discover a forgery in their midst.
So museums can choose to do several things when it comes to forged art. They may decide to label the object as dubious and keep it on display, take the object off display completely, or take the most extreme action and decide to deaccession the object. Think of deaccessioning as the opposite of acquiring. It's when a museum decides to sell or, in some manner, dispose of a work. And some, like the chairman of San Francisco's Mexican Museum's board, for example, simply try to ignore the matter and explain away the fakes in their museum by saying that, quote, many museums accept fakes all the time. But experts aren't quick to label a work as a forgery or a possible forgery. Because once a piece is questioned, it can be difficult to relabel it as authentic. Although investigations into authenticity can result in works being ultimately better understood, there are always some who cling to the doubt once it's surfaced. You know the old saying, once a liar, always a liar, and that, for some, can apply to art, too.
The truth of the matter, say experts in this type of fraud, is that it is really hard to tell the difference between fake and real work sometimes, at least without an extensive forensic study in combination with the educated eyes of experts. Historically, museums have depended on curators and art historians to evaluate the authenticity of objects in their possession, or things they're interested in acquiring. Today, many museums have added a conservator and conservation scientist to that team as well, giving themselves a more well-rounded look at works of art.
That deep, well-rounded look is especially necessary when you're evaluating the works of old masters or ancient works in general, because they're often hidden under centuries of retouching and layer after layer of varnish, plus wear and tear. And like the tiara, fakes have flaws. For instance, there may be traces of modern tool work. Rachmofsky, in this case, had used modern soldering, though concealed, to join the three sections. Similarly, we saw this kind of problem when we talked about the mysterious crystal skulls earlier in the season. To the naked eye, you may not see it, but with advancing technology, you might just find evidence of jeweler's tools used to carve an artifact claimed to be centuries old.
During the 20th century alone, thousands, perhaps closer to millions, of fake artifacts made their way into museum collections around the world, whether through purchases, donations, or museum exchanges. Institutions willing to acquire artifacts with no documented provenance opens the door to forgers. And once a fake is in the museum door, it can be difficult for the purchaser or institution to admit that they were taken in by a scam. We came across a quote that we're going to paraphrase here because it is a perfect summarization of the problem. Small, unsigned works are dicey but provocative. The Museum of the Bible, for instance, recently admitted all, yes, all of its Dead Sea Scroll fragments are forgeries. It's reported that curators suspected the fragments might not have been authentic when they first examined them, but the museum accepted the donation regardless.
And to jump back to the tiara on this point, according to a Washington Post article printed in March of 1903, this is at the end of the six-year battle of words in the press, while the authenticity of the tiara of Saïda Farnese was being investigated, Aaron de Villefosse, curator at the Louvre, published a letter denying that the museum had any dealings with the Hochmans. French archaeologist Théodore Reinach, who had funded the purchase of the tiara, also published a letter. In his, he declared that the doubts expressed were, quote, only reiterations of former aspersions, which do not affect my belief in the genuineness of the tiara. On the other hand, the newspaper Le Figaro went as far as to ridicule the entire controversy and the Louvre itself, arguing that whether the object was real or fake, it was, quote, of trifling historical value regardless.
As president of the local association Friends of the Terrace Museum, Marthe-Marie Coderc dedicated years to fundraising to buy paintings by Catalan painter Etienne Terrace for the museum's collection. It turned out, though, that 82 of those paintings attributed to the artist and belonging to the museum were discovered to be fakes. And that was more than half the paintings they had in their collection. Of the scandal, Coderc stated, quote, maybe we were a little naive to not have looked closer at the origins of these paintings. In hindsight, what can you say? It's a big deal, and museums themselves write about it, including Thomas Hoving, a former director of the Metropolitan Museum of Art in New York, who wrote a book about hunting for art forgeries called False Impressions: The Hunt for Big-Time Art Fakes.
If it all sounds a bit depressing and you're now wondering about the art in your local museums, it's not always bad news. Though it's way less common, here's an upbeat takeaway. Sometimes the opposite happens, like in 2006, when two believed to be fake Rembrandts were demonstrated to be actual authentic works. And cheers to that.
So since you're in a cheers mood, are you ready for a bogus bevy?
I certainly am after this.
Okay, so I wanted to make something gold. I know that's a little predictable, but...
Hey, why not? Let's go gold.
One of the things, this is kind of a come with me on a journey moment, because the drink I'm choosing to make a fake of also has its own interesting story that kind of relates to this, where this is a drink that is pretty modern. It was developed in the 2000s. It's called a Gold Rush. And it was developed at the bar Milk and Honey in New York. But it has such a classic taste to it. It just feels like a classic cocktail that people have often misattributed it to being much older, which is hilarious. And it's a great drink. You would love it. It's very much like a bourbon version of a bee's knees.
Oh, I would love it.
Because it's just 2 ounces of bourbon, 3/4 of an ounce of lemon juice, and 3/4 of an ounce of honey syrup. A really basic bourbon drink that just has a nice, that honey and lemon together, ground it and balance it out so nicely. So I wanted to make something that looks like it, but is not it by a wide margin. This one is interesting, and I'll tell you why when we get to the mocktail. So we're calling this one Fool's Gold, and it is a juicy juice drink. It's very fruity. So it has 1 ounce of pineapple juice, 1 ounce of orange juice, 1 ounce of white grape juice, and 1 ounce of lemon juice, which might sound like a lot, but you have a lot of sweet juices. You got to balance them out. Then you are going to add 1.5 ounces of gin and 1/2 ounce of a chili liqueur. I used Ancho Reyes, which I really love. This is a really fun drink because it does look like fruity and light, but that chili flavor will bite you. And because of the lemon, it's not as sweet as you might anticipate. The mocktail on this, you're just going to sub out that chili liqueur for a spicy mango syrup and sub out the gin for a flat tonic. I like the mocktail so much that I almost would make it in lieu of the cocktail. They're both very yummy.
Yeah, the mocktail sounds like a wonderful, refreshing drink.
Yeah, it's interesting to me because whenever you have a drink that's that fruity, the tendency is often that it's also going to have a little bit of orgeat and some rum because you're getting into very like tropical tiki drink territory.
It's funny that you say that because as you were listing out the juices, I'm like, is this going like, to be
here comes here, the
is
rum.
This what kind of rum is this going to be? even though I'm not a huge gin person, I was relieved that it was gin.
Yeah. Yeah, you could also use vodka in it, and that will be a neutral spirit, and that will change it a little bit more because the gin does like bring its own dance steps to the party. But it is fun because it could be that, and it doesn't taste like what I associate with tiki drinks at all. So the other thing you can do with this that makes it fun is that, and we always talk about this with all of our drinks, but just to reiterate, you can sub out that liqueur or syrup note. If you don't want a chili liqueur, you could put anything else in there that sounds interesting to you. You could do like an aloe liqueur. You could do something like an elderflower situation.
Which is always on my list.
Yeah. I would almost be tempted to do a little absinthe in here and see what happens. It might get a little messy, but it might be worth it.
Try.
But anyway, that is the Fool's Gold. You know, you're copying something and you're trying to pass it off. So you can add whatever feels
exactly
right, is my feeling.
Sign it on the front, write genuine forger on the back.
Listen, the good news is you're going to have a lot of vitamins from all of that.
No scurvy.
Orange and pineapple. You'll be full of antioxidants, ready to take on your day. The mocktail would be great for breakfast. Like with if you're doing a brunchies, you know, if you drink in the morning, I guess you could do the cocktail. Please drink responsibly. We hope that you have enjoyed hanging out with us today. We sure have. And we will be right back here next week with more talk about forgeries and more bogus bevies.
Criminalia is a production of Shondaland Audio in partnership with iHeartRadio. For more podcasts from Shondaland Audio, please visit the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you listen to your favorite shows.
From BBC Radio 4, Britain's biggest paranormal podcast is going on a road trip.
I thought in that moment, oh my God, we've summoned something from this board.
This is Uncanny USA.
He says, somebody's in the house, and I screamed.
Listen to Uncanny USA wherever you get your BBC podcasts, if you dare.
Do you dream of a healthier life, but education feels out of reach? Trinity School of Natural Health makes holistic education accessible with online programs to fit your busy schedule. Trinity School's Certified Natural Health Professional Program is the perfect entry point to gain foundational knowledge to empower yourself, your family, and your community to live healthier lives. Turn your passion into a career. Visit trinityschool.org for more info now.
The wait is almost over. Get ready for the 2024 NFL season as the full schedule is announced. Bring it! Every rivalry, every rematch, every rookie debut, every game revealed. The 2024 NFL schedule release, presented by Verizon, coming in May. Live on NFL Network, ESPN2, and streaming on NFL Plus. Terms and conditions apply to NFL Plus. Visit NFL.com/schedule release to learn more.